Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your hack license of bilingual phenomena. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
Yo soy Ben Ratliff.
The options are so many options, yeah. The ladder you gotta be climbing, you always just check on your status. Got what's been happening lately, we don't even talk no more.
With us today is special guest Julianne Escobedo-Shepherd, culture editor at Jezebel. Hi, Julianne.
Hello.
And John Caramonica. We're talking about two forces that are meeting at the same point but going in different directions. Prince Royce and Pitbull, who both have new records. Prince Royce's is called Double Vision. Pitbull's is called Dale. And from Prince Royce's Double Vision, we just heard Dangerous, Prince Royce featuring Kid Ink. So first question is, what does it signal that Prince Royce, who's been around for 5 years or so? Making bachata records. Prince Royce, Dominican guy, born and raised in the Bronx, is now making an English language record.
Well, a couple things.
Which is not a bachata record.
Which, you know, kept me up nights, frankly, when I got this record, because I was really hoping it was going to be an English language bachata record. But, you know, I got problems. I'll work through them. Okay, so Royce has had an interesting role, I think, for the last few years. When he first arrived, Romeo Santos from Aventura is sort of on the cusp of becoming a solo star. But bachata sort of as a genre is not the most... If you were a young singer, you wouldn't necessarily assume bachata was like a lane necessarily, because it wasn't a genre where 20 acts were thriving. Aventura was thriving, Romeo Santos was thriving, and then the leap from there to like Toby Love or Extreme is like huge.
Right.
So maybe you see it as a huge lane, or maybe you're like, that wouldn't do that. But Royce figured it out. You know, he started with a cover of Benny King's Stand By Me.
Well, that wasn't what he started with, though.
Well, no.
Right?
It's what we know him to have started with.
Yes.
But he kind of fizzled with a Spanish language single prior to that.
Right.
And he managed to carve out a legitimate, cool second place career, which is like nothing to thumb your nose at, especially when the first place is a guy like Romeo, who is intensely charismatic, a phenomenal singer, and beloved by literally millions of people. The idea that Royce is moving to an English language record, to me, signals that he has seen the ceiling in bachata. That's how it feels. And he's always done some English singing. Romeo does English here and there as well.
Yeah, all of his albums have had one or two English songs.
But it feels, to me, it always felt more natural when Royce was going back and forth. And this feels like sort of the end of like a very obvious thing that's always kind of hovered over Royce, which is he's very clearly comfortable in both languages.
Well, Julianne, what was your pre-reaction when you heard that it was going to be an English language record, but it was not going to be bachata?
I kind of had the same concerns as John. I was a little sad, a little scared, because I think it's not just that he saw the ceiling in bachata, but he saw the ceiling in how far he could go with popularity while not doing an English language album. Obviously,
very far.
You know, obviously very far, but I think that he really wanted to, you know, take it to the next level, be a pop star, a global pop star, which, again, Romeo Santos is the most viewed artist on YouTube over Taylor Swift, over Katy Perry, all of those people. But I think that there's still this sort of, I don't know, this concept that if you can make it in the English world, which is notoriously fickle, then you can make it anywhere. And that's what Pitbull did.
And it's a weird implication, I always thought, because you look at Romeo and, you know, Romeo sells out three nights at Yankee Stadium. And like, weirdly, like Romeo's publicity people are still like, you know, they still pitch it as if nobody knows who it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's some legitimacy to that. I'm sure there are certain people who don't know what it is.
Right.
Obviously, language is a barrier. That's one issue. But also, like, I do think in the case of Romeo, not totally comfortable in English. And so his ceiling, which is extraordinarily high, but it's not going anywhere.
Right, right.
And I imagine Royce tried talking about this. He was a little cagey about it. But I do imagine on some level he was like, well, I can do this thing. I may not be able to sell out three nights at Yankee Stadium, but I can make an English language record. Royce, I think, wisely is looking beyond bachata stars or beyond Romeo specifically as role models. My first listen to this record, I was like, it sounds like an Enrique album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds like kind of like a slightly more
but
street Enrique.
Less boring.
Well, yes.
Very, very less boring. Yes. Much less boring.
Piece of your man, Enrique Iglesias. Mm-hmm. Ben Ratliff, noted Enrique Iglesias scholar. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that a guy who comes from bachata tradition, which has not historically been the Latin pop to cross to the center, would choose an album like or choose an approach like this is notable, I think. I think part of the thing that sets the table for that is a thing that's happened a lot in the last 2 or 3 years is a lot of down-the-middle Latin pop, Enrique style, to get played on basically East Coast and Miami, New York tropical radio. Mm-hmm. You'd have bachata remixes or bachata versions or edits of traditional Latin pop songs. So it brought Latin pop closer to bachata, and I think it made it easier, like, for Royce to jump back in the other direction and be like, well, right, you guys are kind of coming in my direction, so I can just hop back over.
Well, also, Royce's album is much, like you said, it's more street, but it's also, therefore, much younger.
Yeah.
And I think part of his role in bachata was that, you know, even when Aventura was doing it, bachata was still sort of seen as, like, an old-school genre.
Yeah, it's your, mom, it's your mom's music.
It's your mom's music. So Prince Royce really just brought it into a younger generation. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he's still young. He's 25, 26. He's also now, I think, you know, it's not just a cynical move for popularity. I do think that he just wants to work in these genres. He wants to do R&B. He wants to do pop. He wants to do hip hop because mm-hmm. he's of his generation and he's of New York.
John, you did an interview with Prince Royce that's running in the Arts and Leisure this weekend, and you asked him about, you know, his first, or he told you about his first move, his first recordings. You know, he saved up by working at
Sprint,
my local Sprint.
Nice.
And where he actually did a surprise appearance the other day. Did you hear about
that? I did not know
that. He went in there and just like started selling phones.
Sold some plants.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
People, you know,
See, that would make me switch to Sprint.
I was actually just thinking that. Like, why didn't I know about this?
Yeah, like that have the bill thing. I'm not, whatever.
I need a new phone anyway with this thing.
Yeah, I'm not. Okay,
Prince Royce.
We see you, Sprint. Yeah, we see you, Sprint.
So he told you about saving up money to make his first mm-hmm. recordings. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, I grew up listening to hip-hop and R&B. Mm-hmm. English is his first language.
According to
what he has said. Yeah, yeah. Bilingual. Yeah. Anyway, he said, you know, I could have gone in any direction, but I did a bachata record even though my friends told me I was crazy.
Right.
So why did he do a bachata record?
Also, a thing that I thought is like, your friends don't know what's going on, because also made your friends not know what's going on with Aventura. But I think probably what they were suggesting is what I was saying before, which is Aventura was such a category killer.
Yeah.
And Romeo such a category killer that it didn't seem like there was an option for a second or third or
right.
fifth guy.
Mm-hmm.
A thing that didn't make it into the Q&A was he was like, he's like, I'm frustrated that, like, with Latin pop, bachata in specific, but Latin pop, he's like, why is it always just one new person? I want to sign people. He's like, I think bachata should have 5 new people a year.
Yeah.
I think
mm-hmm.
Latin pop should have 10 new people a year. He's like, it's strange to me that, like, in mainstream pop, there's just a huge cluster of people who are always showing up and trying out. And he's like, in my genre, it seems weird that everybody only focuses on one person at a time. And I think that's – I imagine if his friends were discouraging him, they were probably like – yo, that lane is handled.
Sure.
Right.
So why are you doing it?
Well, let's go on and hear one more track,
should listen to Old Royce, because I think it's the distinction between what we came in on, Dangerous, which is basically like a faux Drake. Yeah,
it's
it's like
faux Drake club banger. I really can't wait to hear it at like 2 a.m.
Kirko Bangs Wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Kirko Bangs Wave. I think we should listen to something from the first album that shows a thing that he talked about a lot is the distinction between making a pop record and making a bachata record, and what they sound like and what the approaches are. And I think if we listen to Corazon Sin Cara from the first record, we can hear we'll hear that too. And we'll also hear the difference between American pop and bachata.
Y el corazón no tiene cara, y te prometo que lo nuestro nunca va a terminar. Y el amor vive en el alma, ni con un deseo sabes que nada de ti irá a cambiar. Prende una vela, rezale a Dios y dale gracias que tenemos ese lindo corazón. Prende una vela. Esta canción, sí.
So that was Prince Royce, Corazon Sin Cara.
Feeling good?
I love him.
So after he made his first recordings, he was picked up by Sergio George, the producer, who was also Mark Anthony's old producer.
It is not an insignificant thing.
Sergio George is a very bottom line, you know, watch the way the waves are moving kind of guy.
And at that point, he was running an independent called Top Stop.
Right.
Which Roy sort of described as like the last stop of many, which seems a little weird to me if it's Sergio George, but who knows? Mm-hmm. Narratives are fungible.
Right.
But yeah, it was picked up by Sergio George. And I think that to me is also where Stand By Me comes in, the idea of doing an English language cover. Because I think a thing that Sergio George, given his background, understands is translatability between back and forth.
Yeah.
But what's striking to me is like, you know, Stand By Me, that's an English language bachata record. The way they did it, they did an English language bachata record with a little bit of Spanish. And I remember when I heard that for the first time, I playlisted that. Like, I was just like, yo, this is the next thing. Like, this is happening.
Right.
And then it never happened again. Well, it happened with Leslie Grace.
Leslie Grace.
But they were just copying the Royce thing. Again, it's a fortuitous pairing. They do not work together anymore. He no longer is affiliated with Top Stop. I think RCA fully picked him up. I'm not 100% sure of the legalities, but I feel like he's not affiliated with Sergio anymore.
Well, I think there was a lawsuit, too.
I think that's probably right.
Anyway, who knows? Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you can hear the difference in those songs.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thing that he said in the interview is like bachata is like a simple, clean voice. Simple. And you listen to Dangerous or anything else on Double Vision, you know, and it could be a Chris Brown record. It could be a Drake record.
Right. You know, there's more processing. But that's the thing that kills me, actually, about this record, which I do like. Mm-hmm. His voice is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is just gossamer. He is... I'm, you know, heretical for saying this, but he is, I think, far better than Romeo Santos. Like, I mean, just as a vocalist, and his the way his vocals lend themselves to the genre. Mm-hmm.
I think he needs to take a break. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're quitting on me now. I know. I love Romeo. Like, I really just, there's just something really special to me, so gossamer about the way his vocals translate to it. And I don't get that on this album. Even on the acoustic, even more Latin poppy songs, I just don't get it. And I'm not sure what it is, if it's just different instruments or...
I think it's, you know, the vocals are stacked, obviously,
right,
you know, and that sort of de facto thickens a little bit. A thing that he said, I don't remember if it made it in the final Q&A, but he was like, you know, in terms of vocal approaches, singing English and singing bachata, that he felt, or maybe what it is his relatives were saying to him, like, you sound more manly singing English. Mm. And I think in his mind, English is what he spoke with his friends on the street. And it's a little tougher. It's like a tough, it's his language of toughness. And bachata is like family and romance, and it's his language of sweetness. So I think.
Yes, in fact, I think he said to you that there are things that you can sing in a bachata song that would be corny.
Yes.
Right.
In English.
And vice versa. In English,
that would be
vulgar.
That would be too street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think what you're saying is totally right. Although I think what I would guess is like, that's what he wanted because he wants to be mistaken for a guy who gets played on Power 105.
Right.
He wants to have it be seamless or Z100 or whatever. I think he wants to bury the bachata identity a little bit.
Sure.
And even though I like that voice and you like that voice, I think part of what's happening is he doesn't want that voice to hold him back.
Right.
He understands it's like a potential liability.
Has he ever heard of Michael Jackson, though? I'm like...
We already got one of those.
Come on. Give me that falsetto.
But we were saying that he might have made this move because he sensed the ceiling. But... ceilings shift over time.
Of course.
Ceilings change, you know? And I mean, with singers like this, sometimes I get the sense that when they do something that seems to be sort of the crossover move, and everybody has conversations like this about what does it mean that they're doing a crossover move, but they're also sort of expanding their portfolio. Mm-hmm. 5 to 10 years from now, he's probably going to make a bachata record again.
Oh, he told me his next record's a bachata
record.
Okay. Yeah, no.
So there you go.
Yeah.
You know, he's got more options. It's not like he's done one thing up till now and then, you know, that's it.
I mean, it's smart. It's good. You know, it's a long-term investment,
yeah.
Like you said. Like, he's diversifying the portfolio. And you know, I think that probably our initial disappointment at the concept of him doing this album, it will be mitigated by, the next bachata album, the And who knows what that will look like also, because who knows where Bachata will be after this album comes out and he sort of drops out the game for a little bit.
Also, can I just really reiterate that I would like to hear someone, Royce or otherwise, doing English language Bachata?
Yeah. You know it's going to be Drake. And
that'd
I think
be
that
fly.
No, it would be fly. And I actually have, I think I've tweeted this like 25 times.
All
Drake,
right.
Make a bachata album.
There we go.
Or song.
He's already been on Romeo Santos.
Yeah.
He needs to sing on a bachata song. Mm-hmm.
True story.
About his woes. Both literal and figurative.
Okay. Can I read off a list? Because again, I think it's important in order to understand Royce's headspace. Mm. I think it's important. I pulled up the credits from this record, and it's important to mention some of the names who are on this record. These are people who work in the pop space, like very blatantly in the pop space. Jason Evigan, Amar Malik, your man Nasri from Rude. I mean, from Magic.
Yes, my man.
Your
yes.
man. Yes. All these people are your Ooh. Mans. Ilya, who's a producer. Savin, who's one of Max Martin's guys. Toby Gadd. I mean.
What about Jason Evigan?
Yeah, Jason Evigan.
He did a lot of the album, right?
Yeah, he did. He's probably the name that comes mm-hmm. up most. The Cataracts produced a record. This is not a person who, again, I think this is a person who is hiding from Bachata for at least this 6 month stretch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not a compromise. Like, there's I would say this record's not very Latin.
Oh, no.
It's like
barely
maybe,
at all.
Yeah, like 10 to 20% tops.
Yeah.
It's not a very Latin record.
Yeah.
I think if you got this record cold in the mail and you didn't know there was no name on it, you'd think it was like a completely serviceable record by like a B-list Def Jam. Pop R&B singer.
That's true.
And that's fine. Like, I happen to connect with Royce, and like, I'm excited that he's doing this. But there's a couple Enrique moments, I think, towards the end.
Sure.
But it doesn't feel like a Latin record. And in that way, it's maybe the most dangerous crossover, because he's not trying to be an Enrique-style Latin pop star. He's just basically like, I'm skipping all that.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's going on tour with Ariana Grande, for Christ's sakes.
You know, he alludes to Latin genres, but mm-hmm. also I think if you're the kind of listener who doesn't listen to Latin music, you're not going to get that.
Absolutely, yeah. So he's going one way. Royce is going one way.
And Pitbull is going the other way.
If Prince Royce leaves Tucson at 5 p.m.
Oh,
going
yes,
76 miles an hour... Yeah. And Pitbull leaves Tampa at 7 p.m. going, yes.
Wow.
Milwaukee,
yeah. Who will be selling out more?
So this is where they cross, actually.
Not at selling out. Not
in
Milwaukee.
The song Back It Up,
whew.
Which is Prince Royce featuring Pitbull and Jennifer Lopez. Back It Up. So that's Back It Up, Prince Royce. And now, let's talk about Pitbull.
Yeah.
Whose new record is called Dale.
Mm-hmm. Second Spanish language club rap album.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he's been out here for more than twice as long. He's in his mid-30s.
He's older than... He's practically dead.
Yeah, wow.
Except not.
No, he's thriving.
So, and El Taxi is a song that actually was released last year by Sensato.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's been out, yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. Julianne, what do you make of this record?
I love it. I think that Pitbull is at his best when he is rapping in Spanish. And I think he's always been that. And I think it's interesting because Pitbull has so many haters. Pitbull's got haters. And they're all misguided.
Yeah.
But I think that those people won't hear this album, probably, because it's in Spanish. But it's what Pitbull does best. And it takes elements, especially El Taxi, you know, it takes elements of what he does in his English language songs, which people hate, which is kind of interpolate other songs mm-hmm. into bigger, clubbier, poppier
right.
hits, and but also really referencing the sort of polyglot culture from which he comes,
mm-hmm.
Miami. It's no mistake that he incorporated Murder, She Wrote, a reggae song, because it's very indicative. A, it's, you know, reggae is the backbone of reggaeton. Mm-hmm. It's indicative of the cultures of Miami. And he always does that.
It's also wild cheesy. And he always does that.
It's also wild cheesy. But I, you know, if I may say something about my peoples, Latinos love really cheesy pop music. I mean, it's just a fact of many, many countries in the Latin world love cheesy pop music. And so it translates really well, whereas I think it maybe doesn't for Pitbull's haters who are wrong.
So let's hear El Taxi from Pitbull's new album, Dale.
En el taxi, la conocí caminando por un back street. Estaba sexy, pero tan sexy, que por poquito arrollamos un tipo y chocamos el taxi. Era el chofer, el que dijo, oye, mira esa mujer. Está dura, dura, que dura, pero ya tú sabes que ella quiere efectivo, dinero, visa, que chula, lula. Con culo de mula, y no le tengas duda, ella le saca todo el jugo a la uva, que hace vino.
I don't get how that's cheesy. That song seems to me like sort of spare and to the point.
Oh, I mean, Murder, She Wrote is like fun. Referencing, going back to last week's podcast.
Yes.
You know, Murder, She Wrote is like very much the, it's not like as twee as Omi's Cheerleader, but it is the sort of token reggae song of summer TK, you know, summer blank.
Right.
Sure.
It's important, I think, we should talk about how Pitbull became this guy, because Pitbull did not start out this guy. You know, Pitbull was basically just a regular rapper in like cargo shorts and Tims, mm-hmm. from Miami, Cuban from Miami, loosely in the Little John orbit, used to be signed to TVT. Some political songs, but like not generally, basically was best known for songs about butts. And then sometime that's sort of early 2000s, maybe?
Early 2000s.
Yeah. And then sometime in like the mid to late 2000s, like he had almost kind of gone away. And then if you remember, he put out a song that ended up coming out on Ultra. It was sort of a dance club record.
With Afrojack? Afrojack was really the turning point for him when he started working with Afrojack.
So he put out a song. It's called I Know You Want Me, Calle Ocho. And it's basically kind of like, it's basically like almost like a carnival soundtrack. It's loud, it's thumping, it's fast. It's almost house music tempo. It's not fully, but it's like almost house music tempo. It's kind of ecstatic. It immediately establishes him as something other than what he's been. Like prior to that, he's basically just, he's a street rapper. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, a fine one, not even a particularly good one.
Right.
This basically immediately reframed him. And I don't know if you guys have ever read, there's like maybe a Forbes or a Fortune story about like Pitbull Incorporated, where they like take meetings and talk about like what Pitbull's branding is going to be, which is really great. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend it. I imagine this is probably the moment where like the light bulb goes off and it's like, oh, I'm this guy. And like there's a lane for this.
The guy who writes more carnival-like songs.
Yeah. And then basically everything he does from this point forward is some version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's striking. He had a malleability that I think a lot of rappers don't, partially maybe because having a Cuban background, coming from Miami, you know, he had more flexibility to move among spaces. So that could be part of what was happening. Also, I think, you know, he's a guy who I think he likes being an MC in the traditional master of ceremonies.
Yeah.
And didn't he end up doing like the World Cup anthem or something? Like he had,
it was great.
but basically, it's a good song. Basically, all like the worst opportunities that you can have, he took advantage of. Like basically everything Wyclef didn't do, Pitbull started to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thankfully, because Pitbull way better than Wyclef.
Yes, it's a little more fun.
So then he became this guy. You know, he wore form-fitting suits. He, you know,
Mr. Worldwide. Hey. I mean, he takes on that role with seriousness,
with gusto.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just like you know, it's great that I'm here and I want to keep maintaining my fan bases among different languages and different countries or whatever. It's like this is his thing, and he's going to keep doing it. Doggedly.
Yeah. I mean, it's very natural for him. And I think part of that is just that he really, truly loves to party. He really loves to party. I mean,
he's not lying.
He's not lying. He is not lying.
He's keeping it real.
I mean, you know, if you've ever seen him live, it's he is having the much better time than anyone in the audience, which is not to say, you know, it's not great. He has so much energy. It's incredible. But yeah, just, you know, like you said, John, his malleability, it all comes from, it's very natural for him to be a street rapper and to be a club live guy, you know, because he's from Miami and that's
live
just...
on Saturday and live on Sunday. Just FYI, two different things.
Yes.
Also important is I think he was amongst all pop musicians in any genre. I think he was one of the first to genuinely understand the trickle down effect of dance music culture on the pop mainstream. And he's a guy who basically understood that BPMs are going to go up. You know, tempos are rising, chant and party oriented music is going to have, you know, it's basically like if all pop was LMFAO, he sort of understood that that was a lane that was happening, but that those guys weren't going to be around necessarily. So he just started rocking that lane. And that was incredibly smart. He really saw things 3 or 4 years before people are hopping on Zed songs and Calvin Harris songs. He just went ahead and made those records. And it, he's out in front. I mean, I think Julianne's right. Like, people clown Pitbull, and I'm sure there's like viable reasons that people think you can clown Pitbull. But
well, what are the biggest reasons that people do? His, because he seems like what?
He's
an
eager.
Opportunist.
He's corny. He's opportunist. He's over the top. When Pitbull performed the song at the World Cup opening ceremony, he was clowned ruthlessly for his tight pants which had like a short hemline. And I think that people just sort of don't get that, A, that's not a real thing, you know? It doesn't reflect on his music. And B, that's like, those tight pants are a cultural marker,
absolutely.
Honestly.
Yeah. He dresses like an elegant Cuban man of the 50s.
Right.
But who like sort of like woke up in Liberty City, basically, and had to like accessorize in Liberty City. Probably my favorite Pitbull record is Planet Pit, which came out a few years, which is not a Spanish record. It's an English record. He made a hip house record. I love hip house. Love hip house.
Yeah.
Doug Lazy. Oh, my God. I love it. I used to play it on my college radio show. We had like, I mean, admittedly, there's only like 7 hip house songs that are worth a dime. But I love hip house. And he basically made a hip house record. I don't think he called it that, but like I did. So there you go. And the idea that he basically said, I'm going to refit this genre that doesn't quite, I'm going to tailor the genre. Rap as it is right now doesn't suit me.
Right.
It's too... whatever, it's to Atlanta, it's to New York, whatever it is, he's going to make his thing. And that to me was almost end-to-end like an excellent record. And no one cared. But Pitbull does really well. And, you know, I'm sure his single sales are good. I'm sure his streams, like his Spotify streams, are probably good.
Yeah.
But from an album sales perspective, he doesn't resonate because he's very much like an evanescent club artist who happens to also make full-length albums. You know, he's a singles guy who puts out albums.
Right.
Not an album guy.
You think that's going to change?
I don't personally.
No.
Do you?
No. He's never been.
So let me ask you this question, Julianne. Speaking of artists who record and perform both in Spanish and English, have popularity all over the world, define Pitbull against Enrique Iglesias.
I mean, they tour together.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think there's a fundamental difference, A, in... stylistically, but in their personas. You know, they're both, Enrique's not from Miami, but he grew up in Miami, essentially, right?
He was born
in Spain, but then moved to Miami. And I think Enrique, there's something really 90s to me about Enrique, both in execution and in fashion sense.
Brutality. Literal fatality.
That's so mean, but that hat.
Yeah.
The hat and the Ed Hardy.
Like a Pearl Jam. Well, not the Ed Hardy, but it's like a Pearl Jam roadie.
He is. He's like the final man buying Ed Hardy in the world.
R.I.P. Christian Adigye.
R.I.P. Christian Adigye. He's very kind of by the numbers and very, I don't want to say rote, but I think that he's very...
Yes, we do.
Okay, I do want to say rote. He's rote, but he's very... He follows rules. And I think that part of why people dislike Pitbull is because he seems like he's rote, but he's not, and it doesn't make as much sense per se.
I do think that like Enrique sort of inhabits what Julian was saying, which is sort of like a distilled old mode of Latin pop.
Right.
And Pitbull is coming from a very different perspective. If you can get over the idea of liking Pitbull, which everyone should, if you can get over it, what he's doing is like incredibly modern. It's like exactly what you would imagine 2015.
He also doesn't have the burden of being kind of like a romantic hero to deal with and slow him down and make him sluggish. You know what I mean? He can just kind of shapeshift without having to be.
Can I also add one more thing about Enrique?
Yes.
So someone once said about Enrique Iglesias, parts of Enrique Iglesias' shows are fixed quantities. His light quivering voice, his jeans, lager boots, military cap, and stubble, his slow dance and kiss with a hyperventilating audience member.
That all comes back to me now.
Doesn't it, though?
Someone, a great man.
And you know, I highly recommend everybody read Ben Ratliff on Enrique Iglesias circa 2012. You speak about Enrique Iglesias as if you were watching like a hologram or like a wax statue try to sing songs. Yeah. I actually I've seen Enrique live, but not in a long time. Like, can you explain what that's like and why that's basically terrible?
Well, I wouldn't say terrible.
No, you do say the there was something watchable about this, which is
that's talking about shade. So shady.
Oh my god, literal shade.
Literal
like,
shade.
The actual like it's a shade store.
The
it's
experience of seeing him live, what that's like. It doesn't feel vibrant, is the thing. Right. For some reason, I saw him a whole bunch of times within a year and a half period of, you know, yes, and the same things happened, and there was a sort of slow, rehearsed, going through the motions quality about it. Not that he doesn't work on it. Not that he isn't a perfectionist. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's just as much of a Tony Robbins student as Pitbull. But it just felt like where do you go from here? Right. You know. Whereas with Pitbull, I see more ability to reinvent and to stick to other things. And also and like look, it's just the. The truth is in the music. I mean, this Pitbull record is really like colorful,
tactile,
and bouncy,
and
vital, vibrant. When that's happening, it's just those are positive signs.
You know, this is reminding me that I actually went to and reviewed the Enrique Pitbull tour for Rolling Stone, and I didn't even write about Enrique because it was exactly just so. Sort of somnambulant.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was, you know, it was unfortunate because I really wanted to like him. But, you know, kind of now that if I could revise that review, I would actually kind of talk about the idea that Pitbull, you know, he named an album Globalization, which is absurd.
Okay. We were talking about reasons to make fun of him a minute ago.
Right, exactly.
It's also a white paper.
But it's also really accurate because his music is so of the internet era and it so represents how Latinos have been able to connect and genres have crossed over and become old genres have been revitalized because of the internet. And yeah, exactly. Like both of you said, Enrique just doesn't quite get it. And he's very much like, you know, pre-internet, you know, he's before companies started realizing they should market to Latinos.
This is rude to say, but he also has like a hit called Bailando and a hit called Bailamos. I mean, obviously two totally different songs, but like nevertheless. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out. Speaking of people who are crossing genres, I would like to give a shout out to one of Julio Iglesias' other sons, who is Julio Jr. First of all, Julio Iglesias is my great-grandmother's favorite singer of all time.
It's my mom's favorite singer of all time.
It's definitely like grew up with like wild Julio Iglesias cassettes kicking around the house. So peace to him. And Julio Iglesias Jr., little known fact, was on a CMT show with John Rich, where John Rich was basically trying to get someone from another genre. It was a competition. Like Bobby Brown was in the competition. Mm-hmm. It was a CMT show where five or six people who had experience and success in other genres tried to cross over into country because that was a thing that was big 5 years ago. People sort of like dive bombing into country from other genres. Julio Iglesias Jr. won that show.
Really?
And I imagine every week Enrique watched in shame that he couldn't do that.
He should try it. I would be interested in that.
I'd be interested in just about anything but what he does.
I know.
Yeah.
I feel the opposite. There's so much that he's holding back.
You want to know all that.
I want to know if he does something very different, I'm there. So why don't we reach back in time and hear an earlier Pitbull track?
Yeah, let's listen to Toma, because I think Toma's an interesting case. Like, Latin rap obviously is, like, historically not made much of a dent, unfortunately, in the mainstream hip-hop world. You know, it has moments, and there's obviously certain artists who have been successful, and then sort of novelty songs here and there, Lean Like a Cholo and things of that nature.
Oh, God bless.
I like that song.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's a great song. You know, when Pitbull was putting out these records that were basically party rap records from Miami with a little bit of Spanish, they seemed unusual at the time, but they didn't necessarily feel like they were presaging anything. They felt very... I don't want to say sui generis, but they felt kind of like they were their own thing. It's unusual and I think a positive thing that what has ended up happening is he has sort of found his way back on this album.
Yes.
Dale is like basically Toma updated. It's the 2015 Toma. So let's close out on the OG Toma.
Okay. And Julian Escobedo Shepherd, honored by your presence.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don Caramonica.
Next time, I promise you, I swear from the bottom of my heart, tickets will be cheaper.
That's our show. Thank you very much for listening. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez. You should read John Caramonica's interview with Prince Royce at nytimes.com/music. And you should also read Julianne Escobedo Shepherd's piece at deadspin.com called In Defense of Pitbull. Listen to the singers that we've been discussing at our Spotify page.
Rappers too.
Singers, rappers, sing rappers.
Some say I may have coined it.
Yes. And we'll see you next week.